Let's get right to our very first guest, Edward Seeler, joining us via Skype this morning. They haven't hacked into your Skype, have they, Edward?
Not to my knowledge, but you know, if they're doing their job, I shouldn't notice it.
Excellent point. A good hacker leaves no trace, right?
That's right.
This was a major security breach here, but it appears, and media accounts right now are leaning toward the idea that this isn't like somebody from a remote system somewhere managing via networking to sort of worm their way into CIA Langley or something. This looks much more like an inside job. Somebody from within gathering up documents, gathering up information, and then providing it to somebody, perhaps in some physical form even.
Yeah, and that certainly goes along with WikiLeaks' announcement, more of a Daniel Ellsberg operation.
Yes.
Where... And it looked, from what I've read and examined, it almost looks like somebody's personal research project. Let's go through and see what's there and gather it all up. And I've seen some discussion that the chain was probably to a consultant or a contractor, and it was being passed around in some contractors and then got passed to the outside. And so raises the concern about just who has access to material and sort of losing control of the secret material rather than somebody actually stealing it.
There were a number of so-called hacking tools that were part of this leak. We're talking about software tools that are utilized by agencies like the CIA in order to keep an eye on others. And they do so through a number of different programs. And the programs that are created to allow them to monitor people also have names. I get a kick out of some of these names. Hackers are a fairly clever bunch when it comes to naming their little software tools. Things like Elder Piggy and Crunchy Lime Skies and Anger Quake. I guess it's a creative outlet for them. And really, you have to be very creative in order to develop software programs that allow you to sort of worm your way in to other people's information, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be creative and thinking outside of the box. And the software says it will take 10 items. Well, what happens if I stuff 15 at it, 20? What happens if I stuff 9 at it and tell it it's got 12?
So you're kind of messing with the computer's brain at that point.
Exactly right.
Sir, there's also been a lot of talk about the fact that, hey, you know, the average Joe or Jane, you don't have anything really to worry about. But isn't that an oversimplification? I mean, I understand, and national news reports last night, now that we're some 48 hours or so into this story, are saying, hey, if you've got the latest software upgrades for your mobile devices, as an example, you'll be fine. You've got nothing to worry about. And I can understand that certainly updates to an operating system are one of the best ways to help secure it. But it does require that the manufacturers of those systems are aware of how these hacking programs work, right? I mean, you can't solve a hacking issue unless you know how it is you're being hacked.
Well, not always. That's the funny bit. I was actually one of the exploits that's discussed in here. I was reading through affected version 63 through 68 of something, then got patched and then reappeared in version 72. So you can incidentally fix the error. And often these are bugs. So they, if somebody comes across them, they may trigger the issue. The other thing is, in particular, the Weeping Angel, which is the one where the Samsung televisions can be turned on and turned into bugs.
Yes.
Those, what's called the Internet of Things, the refrigerators, the televisions, the cable modems, and the DVR boxes, those are patched much less frequently. They tend to be built by the manufacturer, pushed out, and abandoned, and never patched.
Yes.
And they use off-the-shelf software. They're usually running Android or a Linux, And like everything else, those have to be patched. Mm-hmm.
How do you go about making certain that you are as secure as you can be? As you mentioned, especially with the advent of this Internet of Things, as it's referred to, all of these different devices with Internet connectivity. And between you and I, Edward, I still question the need for things like an Internet-connected refrigerator or toaster oven. How do you make certain that you aren't allowing information to be readily accessible to somebody who may have a nefarious purpose in mind?
Well, the first thing is that thought, do I really need the device that is, you know, do I need to be able to see into my refrigerator from my office?
It just seems so absurd to me, but I suppose, I mean, I can understand there's a convenience factor that comes into play there, but the other side is, in order to gain that convenience, you are making yourself susceptible to somebody getting in there and messing about.
Right, exactly. So the next thing is things like the Internet of Things devices, some of them are patched when you, in essence, they have a setting on them that says, go get patches from the manufacturer. Make sure that's turned on. That in the refrigerator are going to be somewhat less effective because the frequency of patching is much less. So you then have to start trying to secure everything else around it to protect your refrigerator. And so that's making sure that the passwords on your firewall are set up correctly. And you probably want to limit access to your refrigerator to a very specific device, if at all, how it reports out. So you end up reading a lot of documentation around this this sort of stuff.
Right.
And then you've got to make sure that all of the devices on the network that share that network space with the refrigerator are also patched, because what people do is you get into one thing and then you what's called pivot to your actual target. So say you break into an out-of-date Mac that it's brought out of the office, and then from there you step into the refrigerator that wasn't actually connected to the real public internet but was talking to the Mac.
We're speaking with Edward Seeler from the UMaine Cybersecurity Cluster. Edward, one of the programs that was discussed in reports of this leak was called GIDRA, and that's as described by the New York Times, they call it a software designed specifically for spies. And in one of the documents that were released, it's described as a reverse engineering environment created by the NSA. Now, that sounds to me like a tool that could be applied to the software architecture in virtually any device. And it allows you to essentially open up that code and figure out what's going on and then perhaps retool it to your own purpose?
Well, that, if it's true, I haven't read about this device, but if it, a reverse engineering device is what you use when you're trying to figure out how something works. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of the white hat group that would are out there trying to protect us in cybersecurity, if we get a virus, we would put it through a reverse engineering process to figure out what it's doing, so we can understand what vulnerabilities it's exposing.
I see.
But you're right. It's also, I could take Internet Explorer, put it through that, and see, oh, gee, the original programmer doesn't check for this, that, or the other thing. Oh, they're not. Here is how they tell that it's a legitimate Windows binary. If it contains the following words, then it's a fine file. I don't run it past the antivirus software.
Is there a reason for the average person to be concerned about this leak, or is this just another in what has become a series of very public reminders that we are becoming less and less secure when it comes to data? I mean, this makes me think of some of the conversations that are swirling around, for example, the Real ID debate, Edward. They're talking about the creation of a very significant database that includes all sorts of very specific personal information, including things like actual optical scans of physical documents like birth certificates and the like. if organizations like the CIA are finding themselves vulnerable to sort of an insider breach that really kicks the door open out in the wild, so to speak, for people to get up to all sorts of hijinks, is it time for me to really begin to reassess my overall need for connectivity?
The problem is it isn't your need for connectivity. It's who has your data. I mean, it's less than 3 months since I got my most recent notice from the federal government that I was indeed breached in the Office of Personnel Management hack. I've got a number of them.
Interesting that you got multiple notifications. I guess they're good on them for wanting to make sure that you know, right?
Yeah, it is. And they keep keep finding as they're going through the forensics that somebody got a little further in and found my data somewhere else. Ugh. Yeah, so you're right. The question about just what is stored, how much needs to be stored, and being very, very cautious about that. The other question that comes up in my mind is the release of data. So how quickly is the U.S., when it discovers these vulnerabilities, pushing them to the manufacturers and saying, hey, look, we figured out how to break into your software. You better, release a patch to fix this. And the third one is when the FBI was going after Apple to unlock the San Bernardino phone, did they actually have in this dump from the CIA a tool to get into that phone and thus no reason to be hassling Apple to make weak software? Yeah.
Right, right. Well, we'll continue to monitor media accounts, and as information comes forward, I'm just hopeful people are availing themselves to that information and recognizing that, hey, you know what? We're a bit more vulnerable than we might like to think. With regard to security, as a final question for you this morning, sir, what in your opinion is the best approach that doesn't really involve any particular expense? Are there freely available security programs that are worth the time it takes to install them?
Yes, there are. Both the AVG Group and Komodo, it's kind of funny reading through this set of documents, are two freely available antivirus softwares that are noted as being particularly difficult to get around.
Right.
So there are those. The first step to security is think about what you're sharing. Think about what you're installing. Do you really need that?
Excellent. Edward Seeler from the UMaine Cybersecurity Cluster. Thank you for taking the time this morning. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, sir. And we need to make certain that people are aware. Your office, the UMaine Cybersecurity Cluster, regarded as one of the best places to learn how to become a cybersecurity expert. And it's an incredible opportunity for people right here in Maine.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.